Hey guys, this is Jacques. Welcome back to Unpopular. This is like take 10 because I started recording. I tried a few times with my aligners in because I finally got the aligners in for my teeth. And they give you a lisp. And I thought, it'll be fine. And then I was like trying to do it. And then I was lisping all over the place. And I'm like, this is going to like trigger people. They're going to hear it. They won't be able to concentrate. They'll turn it off. You know, I'm already not a great speaker as it is. I'm Australian. And Australians just, you know, completely butcher the English language. So adding lisping on top of that is not good. And then, of course, as soon as I started recording, Chunky is like making noises and doing things in the background to distract me, which he does. He'll sit there quietly the second I start recording. Chunky is like, he's like in the fucking Cirque du Soleil or something, and it's like I can't concentrate, so I screamed at him, and then I'm just like, whatever, let me just start this again without the aligners, and Chunky is being chastised. Anyway, I am going to talk about Meghan Markle's Spotify podcast. I got a lot of messages about that, you guys wanting me to talk about it. I'm not trying to be the Meghan Markle podcast now, because now this will be like the third week in a row that I've talked about her, but we've got to talk about this podcast. But it's not that fun piling onto her, because the thing is, everyone hates her. Like, the reaction to her podcast has been very negative, and honestly, like, justifiably so. It's fucking terrible. But, you know, it's not that fun when it's like everyone's saying the same thing. Do I really need to say the same thing that everyone else is saying? Probably not. But we will get into that. Netflix is selling The OC. That's the new OC spinoff of Selling Sunset. It's so good, you guys. Really, really good. Yeah, there's other stuff going on. Should I talk about Britney? I don't know. She has a song out. It's a song. There you go. I don't have the energy to do the whole Britney thing. I don't think. I've almost talked about it for the last few weeks, and I just don't want to go down the whole Britney. It's just annoying. Someone messaged me about Wendy Williams after the podcast that I did last week, talking about, you know, what's going on with Wendy. And, you know, we weren't sure. Is it substance abuse? Is it dementia? Like, what is it? Someone said it could be alcohol-induced dementia or alcohol-related dementia. I don't know what the official term is, but, you know, you just basically drink too much alcohol and it gives you early dementia, and then when you drink on top of it, it makes it worse. That kind of makes sense, because it's felt like either substance abuse or dementia, and it's like, well, it could be both of them. That checks out for me. Obviously, I'm not a doctor. I don't know what the hell she has, but that's ringing true, I feel like. It's probably that. My mum has started doing unannounced drop-ins. She's getting way too comfortable with me living here. You know, she used to call and stuff beforehand. Now, there's been an increase in drop-ins without asking me, and she is going to get chewed out. I just saw she texted me back because I was like, were you at my house? Like, I was in the shower and I saw someone outside the window. And she's like, yeah, we wanted to see if you want to have lunch. Like, you've got to tell me before. So as soon as I stop recording this, actually, she's going to get a very strongly worded text back. But I was working yesterday, right? So I was like the boss at work, even though I work from home, but, you know, we do it all over Slack. And it was really busy, and I kind of slept in and basically rolled out of bed and like jumped on the computer. So I was like, God, I really need to have, you know, a shower. So I managed to break away from my desk, and, you know, I've got to be really quick because, you know, stuff's going on. So I've got my phone in the shower with like Slack open in case, you know, there's an emergency or whatever. I'm trying to get in a quick shower and get back to my desk. And then I hear like knocking at the door and then someone coming in. And then, you know, if anyone comes here, Chunky just starts barking his head off. So it's like chaos and like Chunky barking. And then I hear my mum and one of my relatives, a cousin that apparently was visiting that I didn't know about. And I was like really short and like rude with them because I was like having I'm like soaking wet out of the shower. I've got to run back to my desk. Like, I'm screaming at Chunky, like, shut up. And they're there. And then I think my cousin thought that I was being rude to her, which I really wasn't. It's just like, I didn't know you guys were fucking coming over. And I'm like, literally, I'm at work. Like, go away. So I'm not being rude to them on purpose, but I could tell that they thought that I was giving them like, you know, like I didn't want to see her, which was not the case. It's just like, now it's not the time. So that happened and was annoying. And then they came back because they left, and then they came back with something. And then I tried to like work. I thought it had calmed down a bit, so I tried to like make friendly conversation. Then like one of my other, like the boss above me, is like, call me about this story. So then I'm like, oh, I've got to go. And I just looked like I was being so rude, and I wasn't. And then I'm in the fucking shower today. Today's my day off. And I see someone walk past the window, and I was like, what the fuck is that? Like, if you guys have seen my house on Patreon, I did like a tour. There's a lot of windows around, and in the bathroom too. I see a figure go. I thought it was a male figure. I didn't know who it was. And I was like, what is going on? I jump out of the shower. I like throw some clothes on. I'm soaking wet. And then I'm thinking, it's like someone trying to get in the house. Does someone think this house is, you know, abandoned? This snoopy, like, what the hell's going on? And then I go to the front. I look out the front window and I see my mum's car like reversing and leaving. And I'm just like, for fuck's sake, like, are you serious? So she's going to get it, because I mean, I'll leave Albury. Like, I moved back here to have people pop in without advance notice. Like, you have to text and call me and then get the okay. You know, I could be doing it. I could be walking around the fucking house with a dildo up my ass for all I know. And then, you know, it's a family reunion at the front door. Like, no, thank you. So I'm actually really annoyed about that. I don't want to talk about Bravo, but I want to talk about why I don't want to talk about Bravo. So I guess I'm going to talk about Bravo. So let's just start there. I've got like major Bravo burnout, and it's been building for a while, and it's normal for me because I get into something, I get really excited about it and just like, you know, consume a lot of that content, whatever it is, you know, politics, Bravo, like, you know, wrestling, books, like it could be anything. And then I get over it and I'm like, no, I need to just be away from this and not see any of this anymore. And then I circle back, and that's just how things go. But the Bravo thing has been building for a while. And but it's funny because I feel like just over a month ago or so, I was getting excited about Bravo again because I was enjoying the new season of Atlanta at the beginning. You know, Beverly Hills is fun. I was like, you know, I'm going to get back into Southern Charm. I watched two episodes of that and I liked it. I was looking forward to watching Below Deck. And then I just stopped watching everything. Atlanta kept having fake fights, which was turning me off. And Marlo, who was actually the most interesting character on there, keeps making fake drama. And it's like taking away from everything else. I'm just like, whatever. I'm like, I can't. And Sanya wouldn't stop talking about Jamaica. It's like, we get it. You're Jamaican and you're an athlete. Like, why do I have to hear it every 5 minutes? I couldn't even be bothered with Southern Charm, which I was liking it, but I'm like, I don't need, whatever. I was like, no, bye. Didn't even start Below Deck. And that's one of my faves. And then this constant hysteria around Beverly Hills is draining me, and I'm going to get into that. You know, and it wasn't just the shows, because like the shows are all fine and watchable and, you know, enjoyable enough, but it's just everything around it. Like, I was so sick of opening social media every day and just being spammed with the memes and the hot takes and the fake news, because my algorithm recognizes that I interact with, you know, Housewives content and Bravo content, so it just gives me more of that. And it's like, I want a break from it, but the algorithm, that's, even though I follow all kinds of different accounts, it'll like only show me Bravo for the most part because it knows I'm interacting with that. And it's just like dominates my timelines even when I'm trying to avoid it. And the biggest thing that was actually pissing me off is the fake news and the fake blinds that keep coming out and keep getting reported, like they're fact. Like, there's this whole wave of Bravo accounts now, and all they do is report and spread fake news, and then the fans retweet it and they share it, and then you guys send it to me. Oh my god, what do you think of Sutton getting her own spin-off? You know, I saw it reported by this random Twitter account with 2 followers, and I'm like, this is not real. Like, so people send it to me and I'm like, they haven't even cast this yet. Like, stop sending me casting information. This hasn't happened. It's not true. Like, none of these stories ever have a source, okay? It's a random fan account, or it's these, like, Dumois knockoffs that just report every unverified message that they get. Like, Bravo and Cocktails is one of the worst at this, and I actually like them. I've DM'd with that account before, so whoever's running it, they're nice ladies. I know they have a podcast and stuff, and I can't hate on them for like cashing in on these stupid fans, but basically every DM that they get, they read out on their podcast, or they have a blog, and the blog is covered in ads, like it's heavily monetized. So then all the fans just share the blog and the podcast around, and then the Bravo and Cocktails people, whoever they are like getting ad revenue from it. But it's like all they're doing is just reporting fake DMs that they get. Like, I'm sure some stuff they've run on there has come true. I'm not saying everything is fake. Like, I didn't believe that Sonia and Luann were getting a spin-off, and I was like, there's no fucking way. And then it turned out they did. So sometimes these things do turn out to be real, but honestly, like 9 out of 10 times it's bullshit. So it's just constant with the fake stories. And you know, I work at like the biggest fucking tabloid news site in the world. I know the Housewives personally, okay? I know producers and stuff. Like, I do this shit for a living. You know, I know I can spot if something's credible or not. And then it's just the whole fandom has turned into just sharing fake news. It's more annoying than like the lame hot takes. Like you always get the generic hot takes of like where they want every entertaining person fired so you can, you know, build a show around Ebony and Sutton or whatever. Like you get those bad takes, but now the fake news stuff is what is really getting under my skin more than anything. And it's very specific to Bravo because I follow a lot of Bachelor fan accounts as well, and they do not do that. Like the Bachelor fan accounts, they get hysterical about the woke things like the Bravo accounts do. So, you know, like there's not enough diversity and they're like spinning out and, you know, they react very strongly about Chris Harrison and shit like that, but they don't just spread blind items around. And I really think it's because the Housewives has a lot of gay fans. It's like all these like twink gay guys. And I really think it's just these annoying gay guys that spend too much time online and they fantasize about being housewives. So they love making up fake tea. It's like that Patrick guy that, you know, that guy that got into a feud with Lisa Rinna and Kathy Hilton because he was like, well, Kathy Hilton hired me to do, I can't even remember what that was. This is how much shit is always going down with these housewives stuff. It's like a new scandal every day. I can't even remember what that one was, but he was like lying, pretending that like Kathy hired him. Then he pretended that like Lisa Rinna hired him. And it was like all fake. Like it never happened. Now he's out. He's back in the news about this thing with Garcelle trying to glob onto that. So it's just pathetic. And I just feel like it's just these annoying twinks that are just making up things. And I'm so sick of seeing it. And, you know, I don't like unfollowing people that follow me back. I think it's like bad social media etiquette. The meanest thing you can do to someone is to unfollow them on social media. It's like if you have like a friendly relationship with someone online, then you unfollow them. It's so cruel. So I feel bad unfollowing these accounts, but I started muting all of the housewives keywords on Twitter because I just didn't want to fucking hear about it. I'm like, let me cleanse this timeline. I don't want to see this shit. And then I just started watching non-Bravo stuff over the last month. Like, obviously, I did the Meghan Markle book. I watched Resident Evil, which you guys know that I loved. I did 2 seasons of Virgin River. I think I have enough of Virgin River. Like, I enjoyed it for what it was. But, like, I get the gist. I don't think I need to watch the next 2 seasons. You know, I've got it. I started watching The Crown. I started watching movies again. I watched One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I rewatched All About Eve with Bette Davis. I'm getting back into all these Paul Verhoeven movies again. So what did I watch last night? Black Book, which I love. So I'm just getting back into, like, other stuff. And the day after I muted all the Bravo things, it was such perfect timing because this whole scandal broke out that you guys already know about, this bot thing, right, with Beverly Hills, okay? If you don't know what happened, which I'm sure you do, but whatever, I'll just say it. Garcelle's son, he's 14, Jax, I think he's the one that Erica told to fuck off on the show. He started getting all these death threats and troll comments online, and then people did some digging on the accounts and it looked like the accounts were actually bots. So then it turned into this mystery of like who paid for the bots. Now, of course, Diana was blamed for it because Diana and Garcelle had been like fighting or something, which I wasn't even looking at that. I saw them arguing, and I hate when the housewives fight with each other over like Twitter and stuff. I just think it's so cringy and I never engage with it. But all the fans said that it was Diana, and then of course, you know, the fake news thing goes into overdrive. So then that's being like reported, like fact, like Diana hired bots, and it's like, you don't know that. You don't know who the fuck hired these bots. I personally think that, one of these loser fans, these twink fans that have wanted to cause drama, and they've gone and hired bots to spam, okay? It's got to be one of them. I don't think it was Diana, but, you know, look, I don't know everything. Maybe someone has some receipts that it was Diana, but I don't think that it was. Some people thought that maybe it was Garcelle. I was sent some screenshots of Garcelle and Jax did an ad for Invisalign together. So they were doing like ads together and people were getting it in their feeds, like sponsored Invisalign ads with Garcelle and Jax. And I'm like, this is weird timing, but and people thought maybe did she do it as like to get a sympathy card? But I don't think that, because as much as Garcelle does like to manipulate and play the victim and stuff, she would never do anything where it's like her kids being abused. And some of the messages were racist. Actually, I don't know how many. I saw one racist message. I don't know if it was like a flood of racist messages or if there was one, but the way that the Bravo accounts are reporting it is making it. I mean, it doesn't really matter if there's one racist message or like 10, you know, one is one too many, but she would never do that to one of her kids. There's no way. I just don't think she would do that. So I do not think it was Garcelle. I do not think it was Diana. I just think it was some loser fan. Now, it was either a fan of the Fox Force 5, so it's, you know, like a fan of, like, Diana and Lisa Rinna and Erica, because maybe they were like, well, because, you know, Erica and Rinna get trolled, like, viciously trolled, you know, so maybe they felt like, well, I'm going to show you guys what it's like to get, you know, trolled like they do, so they were thinking they were giving them a taste of their own medicine. Or it was like someone that's actually a Sutton and Garcelle fan, and they felt like, I'm going to do this, and then it's going to make... then people are going to think that it was Diana and it was Lisa Rinna, and then it's going to end up making them look really bad, and then Garcelle will look like the victim and she'll look really good. Like, I'm sure there's some, like, scheme behind it, but I do not think it was one of the housewives. I truly think it was some loser fan, and I kind of don't care. It's just, it's so gross and pathetic. It's not funny. Like, why is this even happening where the housewives' kids are being attacked? This is not the first time this has happened with children being attacked from this. And this is really specifically to Beverly Hills. Like, the whole Housewives fandom's fucking annoying, but the Beverly Hills thing is so out of control, you know, and on another level that it's just so beyond. And of course, when this happens with the bot thing, it spirals in the Bravo sphere. So first the fans pick up on it. They're like, Diana did this. And then Jax puts out a statement. Then Bravo puts out a statement. Then every single meme account has to repost the statement with their own statement. And then all of the housewives have to put out a statement or repost the statement too, because then if they don't, then the meme accounts come after them. And they're like, well, why haven't you posted about this? You know, do you endorse it? And then it's just like everyone's trying to run one up each other on like how outraged and how much can they condemn what is happening. And then if they respond to anything, then that gets screenshotted and becomes a news story. Like, someone commented to Erica Jane, like, why didn't Bravo put out a statement when your son was getting death threats? And Erica went, exactly. And then everyone was, like, angry, and they're like, Erica's racist because, I don't know why, just, she breathed, she's racist. So, you know, it never ends. It's this, like, cycle of outrage, and everyone just, like, feeds off of each other, and, you know, it just spirals. It's beyond. And people do have a point, by the way, about why is there only a statement with Garcelle but nobody else? Because, like, a month ago, Kyle and Dorit's kids, Little Jagger and Portia, they were getting attacked on social media. People trolled Portia's page, and that when Erica told Jax to fuck off on the show, then all of the fans of Garcelle were like, well, how does the Fox Force 5 like it? So they trolled Dorit and Kyle, could be like, well, you know, we're going to attack your kids and see how you like it. So this has happened before, and Lisa Rinna's daughters have been trolled a lot in the past. When they were featured on the show more, they would get trolled. So it's kind of like, you know, this Beverly Hills fandom is so vile and toxic, and they attack people's children all the time. But yeah, of course, Garcelle, she's the fan fave. Everybody has to come out and publicly defend her. So, you know, Bravo will stop everything for Garcelle, and, you know, every meme account has to be, you know, holding like a candlelight vigil at midnight for her because it's her. But if it's anybody else, it's no one cares. Like, I remember Leah McSweeney came out when Kyle's kids were getting attacked, and she was like, you know, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, stop attacking people's kids, you know, it's a TV show. And then Leah got trolled by all of the Garcelle fans because they said, well, she's racist because why isn't she attacking Erica for what she said to Jax? Why is she attacking the fans for it? You know, so they're just, it's so exhausting. And by the way, good on for Bravo for stepping in and putting out a statement. Like, I'm glad they put the statement out, but, like, they should probably be putting out statements every fucking week for the Beverly Hills fandom, because the trolling that they do to, like, Erica and Rinna especially, they get it so bad, and then their kids have gotten it and stuff, but it's just, okay, so it's special treatment for Garcelle, and everyone else is just left to the wolves, to these gross fans. All right. And I really felt like this was the jumping the shark moment for Bravo. I don't know if I'm just, like, kind of over it right now, so this was, it just happened to be perfect timing, but I just feel like why watching this show, this watching The Housewives of Beverly Hills, why must we be in a constant state of hysteria all the time? You know, and I do it too because I get annoyed at the double standard, so I'll even pop off. Like I think I said, I've gone on my Instagram before and I've hit back at the fans because I know the fans were saying horrible things about Lisa Rinna's mum dying and stuff, so I like attack them. But it's like, why does watching this show, Housewives of Beverly Hills, have to be just this constant shit fight between everyone? And like, look, the Lisa Vanderpump fans, that's what I call them, because those Lisa Vanderpump fans just migrated over to Denise and they migrated over to Garcelle. They are the worst, but like definitely the Rinna and Erica fans are getting like pretty full on now because I follow a lot of them on socials because, you know, I'm usually team Erica on the show, but like those fans are getting really like worked up too. So it's just all across the board, you know? And then the fact that like someone in the fandom has clearly gone out and like hired bots to attack someone's kids or a month ago were attacking, you know, Portia and Jagger and stuff. It's like, these people are fucking mental. Like it's just soap opera, you know, Beverly, it's a fucking TV soap opera. Oh my God. You know, who's been all over this? Sarah Galley, of course. She's such a fucking ambulance chaser. Oh my God. Like every time there's a racism scandal on Bravo, she's like, how can I make this about me? And we'll like starting petitions for accountability and stuff. Like she's doing this whole kind of like, it's like The Simpsons, you know, Reverend Lovejoy's wife, like, why won't somebody please think of the children? She's been doing that all week, and she wrote an article in the Daily Beast about this. Again, it's like, how can she fucking attach herself to this and, like, put the spotlight on her so, like, she has the loudest voice on this? It's always with, like, it's always with black racism issues that she does it too, which is so odd. It's like a word for this. I don't know what it is, but you know when like white people make, you know, like when white people insert themselves into like black issues, whatever that is, she's doing that. There's some woke terminology for that. She's doing that. And does she get paid for these Daily Beast articles and these Vice articles? Every time there's a thing, she manages to like pump out an article for Vice or Daily Beast. And I don't know if she's getting paid or she just does it to have like her name in lights. But you know, they all do it. Okay. All of these accounts do it. They glob onto these things and they use it to like boost, you know, they fuel the hysteria. So then it boosts the engagement on their own page and their following and their podcast and whatever. Like they're all doing it. It's just gross and like exhausting, and it's just totally ruining the experience of the show. You know, like we can't go like 1 week, it feels like, without, you know, our hairs on fire. Like we have to be in this constant state of like a moral panic just watching The Housewives of Beverly Hills. And it's so fucking corny now too. Like I think I've said this before, but I swear the fandom wasn't this bad. Like I remember back in the day, like Bret Easton Ellis would talk about Vanderpump Rules and it kind of felt like it was a little cooler. And then I don't know what the shift was. I don't know if it's because of streaming and now it's become so mainstream that just everyone can watch it, and with social media everyone has a voice, and it's just, I don't know, but it's just so uncool and joyless. It just feels like very small-minded, all of it. The reaction to it, the conversation around it, the nitpicking. It does feel Karen. Someone said stop calling people Karens because it's misogynistic. It's not just the Karens. It's the Karens and the fucking Twinks. It's like both of them. The Twinks and the Karens have ruined it for everyone. And I'm just not going to be as married to these shows anymore. You know, you end up watching them out of habit because you're just like, oh, well, you know, I watch these anyway. They go through ups and downs. Sometimes they're better than other times. So you go through the low times and you wait for it to get juicy again. Like it was quite fun at the start when Atlanta started. I really liked it. And then it kind of got boring and, you know, but now I'm just being more ruthless with it, where I'm like, if I'm not enjoying this, I'm not going to watch every episode. You know, the clips, people post the clips on social media. So even when I stopped watching Atlanta, I still caught some fight they had in Jamaica because I could, you know, watch 2 minutes of that on YouTube or in a tweet. And I'm like, that's enough. I don't need to be watching every episode of this. I'm sure I'll get more excited when Potomac, you know, Potomac's like the best housewife show pretty much. So I'm sure I'll be watching all of that. I am kind of looking forward to watching Salt Lake City, which is weird because I've trashed Salt Lake City so much, but with all the Jen Shah stuff, I'm just kind of curious to see that. But yeah, look, I don't think it's, I'm going to be moving forward. I don't think I'm going to be like watching every single episode. I'm going to tune in, you know, if it's boring, I'll turn the episode off. And I'm usually very anal with how I watch television or consume anything. Like I can't watch something out of order. I can't come in halfway through a series. If I'm watching a show, I do like to be sort of paying attention, sort of doing a lot of stuff in the, you know, having it on the background because I want to like catch everything. And now I'm just like, you know, I'll get the highlights. I don't want to be involved with this fandom. I can't, especially the Beverly Hills thing. It's just been such a turnoff. And there's so many other things to talk about. I mean, yeah, I'm watching all these other stuff now. There's a lot going on. I can't, yeah, the ambulance chases and the outrage. And it's just, I've just had enough. Like, it's just too much. On a lighter note, a reality show that doesn't make me want to like hijack a plane and drive it into the Twin Towers is Selling the OC on Netflix. So good. Isn't it nice just to be able to watch like a dumb show and not have 3 weeks of social media spiraling into an unhinged frenzy because somebody did a microaggression? I mean, it was so, it was like a breath of fresh air putting this on after the Beverly Hills hysteria. Although, you know what, I might be speaking too soon because it turns out that the fan faves on the show are actually all like full on like OC MAGA Republicans and the villains are like the minorities and stuff. So we'll see what happens when that starts catching wind. When people find out more about that, I'm going to get into that in a minute. But yeah, the show is great. It's a lot more action-packed than Selling Sunset. I've been calling it like the Bratz to Selling Sunset's Barbie. Although not to say that I don't appreciate how boring Selling Sunset is. Like I do enjoy that kind of vacuous, dead-eyed drama. It does have its own appeal, just like it did on The Hills. Like you go back and watch The Hills and nothing's happening, but it's still so fascinating. So, you know, I'm not putting down Selling Sunset because I really got into that recently and I love it after writing it off as boring for a really long time. But I think Selling the OC is better. People think that it's more real than Selling Sunset. I actually don't know. I think it's a mix, which I think Selling Sunset is, because Selling Sunset, as fake as it is, you do have like real moments peek through, and I kind of feel like that's the same with this one. Although the shows do tend to get progressively faker, I think, as they go on. But the real estate sales specifically, they have to be all fake. There's no way that any of those, the real estate deals that they're doing are real. I just can't see it. I don't know how they do it. I don't know if they have an actor come in and like play along and pretend that they're doing a sale, and then everyone has to react to that as if it was a real sale, so it plays out as a storyline, or if, I don't know. I don't know how they do it, but I don't believe any of the sales really. They definitely flew in people strictly for the show too, because half the agents haven't even sold a listing before. Storyline wise, though, it actually works out really well, which is interesting, because sometimes when you just like shoehorn people into a cast, like for TV purposes, it doesn't work out. But this actually plays out well because you kind of have like a bit of a haves and the have not situation. So you've got the top realtors who are getting all of the big listings and like have been there for a long time and have all the experience. And then you have all these like thirsty people at the bottom who they want to climb the ladder and they all have their own motivations for wanting to like make it big in real estate and they want that like luxury Newport lifestyle. So it all totally works. One of the new girls is this tattooed single mom, Kayla, from The Wrong Side of the Tracks. She had a kid when she was, I don't know, she was young. She had her kid young, I think, as a teenager, and she got kicked out of home and then lived in like shelters. And now she's working at a bar after work because she can't sell any houses. So you have her in with these like, you know, MAGA Barbies that are selling $10 million homes. And it's kind of interesting. Also, I want to know what kind of bar Kayla worked at, because I would just like to know her work history. So they have three they have three cast members named Alex, which is actually a Bachelor trope. The Bachelor loves to cast people with the same name, and it'll be like Sarah P, Sarah G. Like they do that all the time as a joke. So they've done that on this. So you've got Alex Hall, then Alex Rose, and Alex Jarvis. Now, Alex Hall is kind of like the boss bitch. So she's just, you just call her Alex Hall. And then Alex Rose and Alex Jarvis, they're besties. They're sort of, I don't know, they're not the villains because they're actually the fan faves, but on the show they try to make them like they're the villains and they're the outcasts, but they're just kind of like the Alexes and they're together and everyone just calls them Jarvis and Rose or calls them the Alexes. And yeah, there's this big divide on the show. So, you know, everyone hates Alex Rose, Alex Jarvis, and then this other guy, Gio, he's really cocky. He's got this mum, this like Newport mum with the most insane plastic surgery, and they're the most successful, these three, and they're getting, I think they've been there the longest, they get like the biggest listings, and like every scene with them is just everyone is so jealous of us because we have the biggest listings, we're swimming laps while they're in the kiddie pool. Like they'll have these like fake one-liners that they have to like, you know, spit out when the cameras show up, but really like they just cut to them and it's just like they're just so jealous of us, like every scene. But the thing is, they are kind of jealous of them, the other girls, because you know, the others are down there all creating all this like fake reality drama, and they're dealing with like little listings, and then like Jarvis and Rose and Gio at the top with, they've clearly got all these rich friends and they're just like living the dream. So I think because the others are so thirsty, it made Gio, Rose and Jarvis the fan favorites, just because the rest do spend a lot of time making drama, which is good for the show, but then at the end in the edit, it makes them look really unprofessional. And it is very funny because people have now figured out that Gio, Rose and Jarvis are like Republicans, because they all follow, they went through their Instagram follows and they're following like Newsmax, Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson, like, you know, the whole thing. So they're clearly in that OC MAGA crowd. Actually, someone sent me a picture of Jarvis and Rose, and they were hanging out with some like hot MAGA Barbie that was in the Trump administration. So they're all in that world. Meanwhile, the villains are like Alex Hall, who was just sort of like the ultimate like girl boss realtor. Then you have Kayla, the Latina single mom, and she has all these like mental health issues all the time. She's always crying and she's, you know, going to the bar to put food on the table for her son. There's a bisexual guy that's in their group too. So all these like progressive stereotypes are the bad guys. And like the MAGA crowd are like the really successful, like professional ones that all of the fans love, which is like so different to how these shows usually play out. I mean, even on Selling Sunset, Boring Chrishell and Amanza, she's a Latina single mom on that one, they're like the good guys and Christine's the bad one. So it's, they've totally flipped the Selling Sunset thing around. And I think what probably happened to cause the divide, I think that Gio, Rose, and Jarvis, by the way, was I calling her Rosé before? There's a K-pop star called Rosé that I was looking at earlier. So if I'm saying Rose, Rosé, that's why I'm getting them mixed up, or whatever, Rose. I think what happened is that they were already working at the Oppenheim group. I think they were doing really well. They're really successful. And then I think they brought in these new people, basically for show purposes, these new people who are not on their level, who do not have that much of a successful history in real estate. I mean, Kayla, the single mom, she has not sold a single home. I mean, I haven't watched the whole season. I'm like halfway through the season, but she hasn't sold anything. She's pretty hopeless. And she even says that the job that she was in before this one, she was just working as an assistant to another real estate agent, and they told her like she was going to fail when she went over to the Oppenheim group. So I don't think that they're very good real estate agents. I think they've just been brought in for the show. So I think that and because of that, that's why they're making a lot of drama, because they're like, well, we're here for a TV show. So they're making more drama. And I think naturally that's obviously going to turn off like Rose, Gio and Jarvis up at the top. So I just think like that's how, you know, the divide has come out. But, you know, everyone is basically like everyone's unlikable, you know, like we all have our fan faves, but they're all pretty horrible people. I don't think you'd really want to be friends with any of them, which I find is sort of the appeal of this franchise. So I was thinking about Selling Tampa, which was the other spinoff that they did. And I had Thomas Kelly on the show that I interviewed, the producer, and he produced Selling Tampa, and he was like, they're the best cast I've ever worked with. You know, I loved that show. And I think that's the problem, because I think on Selling Tampa, and I haven't watched Selling Tampa, but I've seen clips of it and I've seen the trailer and everything, it looked like it was strong women who have like interesting stories that are like really trying to make their mark. Like it's a diverse group of women that are trying to break into the luxury market and then in Florida, and then the struggles that they've had with that. So it's a lot more kind of empowering and inspirational as opposed to aspirational, because the budget, I don't think, was as high for Selling Tampa. Like I've looked at the photos of their office, it does, and this fashion and stuff doesn't look on the level of Selling Sunset. I mean, Selling Sunset's fashion is like, you know, unbelievable. It's like so on another level, and Selling Tampa didn't have that. And Selling Tampa also, it wasn't part of the Oppenheim group, which is selling OC and selling Sunset is the Oppenheim Group. This was a different realtor that was actually quite new, and they were sort of growing in the industry. So I don't think Selling Tampa was a bad show. I just don't think that it fit in with the selling franchise. I think the whole key with these selling shows is it is supposed to be these kind of like Barbie doll type people that are completely overdressed, and you know, they're arguing about something petty against a stunning backdrop of the Hollywood Hills or, you know, Newport Beach, something like that. So I think the Selling Tampa probably would have done better as a show if it had come out just as, you know, some other, like its own real estate show about that, because I think that it was probably a little bit too different to fit in. Like, I think that if you wanted to do one there, it should have just been, yeah, all these kind of like, you know, they should have had, who were those girls, the girls that hang out with the Kardashians, the two sisters, like maybe one of them moves to Florida to start real estate. Like, you need to have that, like, that Barbie doll vibe, and I don't think Selling Tampa had that. I think it was too inspirational and everything, but I will watch Selling Tampa if they bring it back for a second season, which I actually don't think they're going to, but I'm not going to get invested in it if they're not going to do any more seasons. But yeah, I'm excited about the Selling franchise and just getting more into it overall. I'm already following a bunch of them on Instagram, and they're having some like drama on IG, and I'm like, yeah, this is nice. It's nice to watch this instead of the, you know, the Housewives drama. I am fired up over COVID again. It's pissing me off. You guys know that I was really like on one for a while about the COVID stuff, so, like specifically the mandates. You know, I didn't care if people get vaccinated or not, but the mandates were like doing my head, and just the way people were treating each other and stuff, I was definitely like really stressed out and pissed off about it. And then I took a step back. You know, it felt like we're at the end of this. We're moving on and it's fine. You know, it was still a bit of it, but I'm getting pissed off about it again because so much stuff is coming out now, still so many things. And I know that a lot of people stopped following it because a lot of people just wanted to move on with their lives, which I get. But if you do follow it, okay, one, most of the COVID skeptics were pretty right. No, I'm not talking about the, you know, the people that thought there were like microchips in the vaccine and like those crazy people, because the media love to highlight them. So anyone that was like a vaccine skeptic or lockdown critical, et cetera, you got thrown in that category. I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about a lot of the people that were coming out just with like skepticism and criticism of like how all of this went down. Most of them are being proven right now. There are still completely unscientific mandates, and it's infuriating me. So in Australia right now, we literally have teachers, unvaccinated teachers are having their pay docked by the government in Australia. I cannot believe it. I sent the link to my mum and I'm like, this makes no sense scientifically. And she didn't believe it. She said, where did you read that? Like thinking that I'm on like some conspiracy website. I'm like, this is on the ABC. Like this is on the national news here. Like this is legit. And I had to send her like all these real news links because she thought I was making it up. We already know that, by the way, the CDC in the States came out, said treat vaccinated and unvaccinated people the same now, which we all fucking knew, because the vaccine doesn't stop the spread of it. There's no fucking difference if you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. But anyway, this thing with the teachers, with docking their pay, it makes no sense, because if the argument is that being unvaccinated is dangerous, then why are you letting them back in to teach the children? Okay, so either being unvaccinated is dangerous, so you can't be around kids, you're putting kids at risk, or it's not dangerous and it's fine, so they can go back to teaching and go back to work. To let them go back to work but then dock their pay, that just shows that they're being punished for not complying with this completely unscientific mandate. So I'm so mad about that. In the US, they're doing it too in the US as well with universities. I saw a thing how some of the universities over there, they still have not just vaccine mandate but booster mandate. So students will not be able to keep going to school there unless they comply with fucking the boosters, those toxic boosters that don't do anything, and the normal vaccine. And The people that are in that age group, the university age group, they're like the least at risk of COVID. That's like science. That's mainstream science now. That age group is the least at risk. We also know that men under 30 are at the highest risk of myocarditis from the vaccine. Again, not a conspiracy. That's just the fucking health information that's out there. So they're going to mandate vaccines and boosters for men under 30, young, healthy guys. Like, of course, if you're immunocompromised, obese, whatever, maybe you should, even if you are like 21, maybe you should still get the vaccine if you have like all these other underlying health issues. If you're a normal, healthy college age student, why the fuck would you mandate boosters and vaccines? So again, it's not with the science at all. I'm so annoyed about the whole thing. I'm so annoyed about the fact that now we're a few years through this, right? And all of the people that complied with this, that complied with these like Nazi fucking mandates, was completely unscientific. The people that like turned on their friends and neighbors, that ostracized people, that would dob you in if you broke curfew, or, you know, judge you if you didn't wear a mask outside, or just all of that. Like, they just have pretend amnesia now. They've either stopped paying attention to it, or they're acting like they never acted like that. And it's like, no, bitch, I remember how you were. Like, I'm just so annoyed about the whole thing. Like, I'm annoyed that it made it so much harder for me to be able to see my dad. When my dad had cancer, he was in another state. So that was like a whole thing for me to even get. I won't even go over that again, but that was crazy, the rules that they had for me to even get there. I remember like leaving my house once outside and I didn't have my mask. It was like 11 p.m. at night. This is when I was still in Sydney before I left. Outdoors, windy, huge open space. This is when you had to wear masks outdoors everywhere. And I thought, I'm just taking Chunky downstairs to pee. It'll be fine. I creep out, take him to pee. I'm coming back to the apartment because the apartment was next to like a big oval field. So it's like wide open space. We know COVID doesn't spread outside anyway. Again, that's the science. You're not spreading it outside. You don't need a fucking mask outdoors. It spreads inside the home. By the way, they lock people down inside their homes, which is the main place that it spreads. Again, another unscientific thing that there's no accountability for. We know more information's coming now about the effects that the lockdowns had on everyone and economy and all of that stuff. But anyway, I'm coming back after taking Chunky to pee. These two guys, I don't know if they were local government employees or what they were, but they're wearing high vis. They're on a buggy. They drive over on the buggy and they're like, "Hey, where is your mask? Get back inside." It's totally like authoritarian, like fascist insanity. And I've got to like run back upstairs, worried I'm going to be like arrested or something. I remember when I left Sydney to come back home to Albury, I had had the one shot of the AstraZeneca, which I completely regret. I hate that I ended up getting that, but I was kind of forced into it because to even travel from Sydney to Albury, which is actually, it's in the same state, it's in New South Wales, I had to get like this travel pass from the government. I had to explain why I was leaving Sydney and have this whole, because you couldn't go anywhere because we're all like locked down, right? I had to explain why I was going to Albury, what the situation was. I had to give them my vaccine status. They're like, "Why aren't you double vaxxed?" And you know how there's like you've got to have a gap between the first shot and the second shot? I had to say, "I've had the first shot. Here's the documentation of it. I'm booked in to have the second shot," which I wasn't intending to get. "And I'm booked in to have the second shot when I arrive in Albury on this date." Like, I had to give them all of that. So not only did I have to get all that approval, we're in the car. I had to hire an Uber driver because I actually can't remember if I couldn't fly because I needed to be double vaxxed or I couldn't fly because I had Chunky and it was too difficult. I can't remember. But anyway, I hired like basically an Uber driver to do like a 6-hour drive. So it was very expensive. And we're driving there and we're down like this. We're in sort of in the middle of nowhere driving down this road. The police stop the car. "We need to see your papers." Like, it's like Nazi fucking Germany. Make sure that we're not like smuggling Jews out in the trunk of the fucking car. They're checking our papers. "Why are you traveling? Are you vaccinated?" Like, going through like all the, it was crazy. I'm like, is this like, am I in a sci-fi movie right now? And people have just forgotten that the world was like that for a while, especially in Australia. And I remember everyone that was a little Nazi about this and it just brought out the worst of them. Like, I don't know, maybe I forgive, but I don't forget. And yeah, every time I see new news coming out about this, I mean, the censorship insane. Okay, so many of these people that were banned off social media now for just saying things like the vaccine doesn't stop the spread. They banned people for saying that. We know that as a scientific fact now, but people went along with that and said that was okay, that we could ban people for saying these things that we know as fact now. The story with Alex Berenson, the journalist, is amazing because he was banned from Twitter. This was, a lot of you guys will be across this, but for those of you who aren't, he was a journalist. He was kind of like COVID critical. He said that the vaccine doesn't stop the spread. He also said that don't treat it as a vaccine, treat it as a therapeutic because you're still going to get COVID with the vaccine, but you'll have a less severe case, which we know that as a fact. They banned him for saying that. And then he recently sued Twitter and they had to reinstate him because they banned him for misinformation. And then obviously everything he said was true. So they've had to reinstate him. And now it's come out that the reason that Twitter banned him was because they were getting pressure from the White House. Again, this is not a conspiracy. I hate that I have to say this, but people seem to think that anything that's against this narrative that is like, I've read this in a QAnon Facebook group. This is all facts. You can look it up yourself. The White House were pressuring Twitter saying, get this guy off, he's spreading misinformation. So the government intervened to silence people. And then we also know that Joe Rogan just had Mark Zuckerberg on his podcast, the whole story about the Hunter Biden story being censored when they banned the New York Post from Twitter to silence that story. That was from like government, that was from the FBI, an arm of the government. So we have the government now infringing on people's free speech. People want to act like there's no threat of free speech. There is. We already know this. I'm just mad about it all. And I can't believe how easy and how quick it was for everyone to slip into this and to start abiding by it all. Because everyone did it. Like, well, not everyone, but a lot of people just lined up like good little soldiers and did everything they were told. I'm mad at myself for even getting that first dose of the vaccine. And then I got a second shot not that long ago. I got the Novavax, which I felt, I don't even know if you have it in America. We have it here in Australia. It's not the mRNA vaccine, so it's actually a lot safer. I kind of was like, yeah, you know, because I'd been waiting for the Novavax the whole time anyway. My whole plan from the start was like, I don't want to get the mRNA vaccine. I'll get the Novavax when it comes out. And they kept delaying it and delaying it and delaying it. And I recently got the first shot because I thought I would need that to see my grandparents that are in a nursing home. And now we don't have the mandates at the nursing home anymore. And I even regret getting that one. I don't fucking need it. Like, I'll be fine if I get COVID, honestly. Especially with the mild strains now, with the people are getting Omicron like multiple times and stuff. There's plenty of people that are, you know, I'm not immunocompromised. I'm not fat. I'm like going to the gym now, like several times a week. Whatever. So yeah, I am fired up about all of it now. And you know what? I've got to say, thank fucking God for Joe Rogan for real, because this last week he had Alex Berenson on the pod. He had, oh my God, who was the other one? He had Alex Berenson. Oh, he had Aaron Rodgers with the NFL. Aaron Rodgers got demonized for not being vaccinated. And then he had someone else on. He had Zuckerberg on. And I'm just so thankful, like, for as much criticism as he gets, that there's someone with a platform as huge as him that is, like, giving these people a platform and, like, keeping the story out there, because people shouldn't forget what happened over these last few years. Like, we shouldn't just move on like it never happened, because then what if it happens again? But good for Rogan, and I'm so annoyed. I'm just so pissed off about all of this. And yeah, so many people have stopped following it. Guys, if you are someone that stopped following it, look into everything that's coming out now, all the studies. You know, people are even like gaslighting and saying, oh, they never said the vaccine will stop the spread. Yes, they did. Like, they've got fucking highlight reels of all the big leaders and the Pfizer CEO, like Trudeau, Biden, like all of them going, if you get vaccinated, you won't get COVID and you won't spread it. Like, they're saying that, but then people are saying, oh, they never said that. They literally, I mean, it's, the gaslighting is beyond. So I think that's as well why I'm really mad, because not only are they not taking responsibility for how they acted and things that they got wrong on this and how they forced this onto us all, they're acting like we're the crazy, like we're being proven correct, and they're acting like we're the crazy ones. Oh, they never said that. Yes, they did. Like, you fucking cunt. So over it. I can't deal, seriously. Anyway, let me tell you what else I've been watching. By the way, if you're a Patreon subscriber, I will drop a Patreon in the next few days. So I will actually talk about Britney on there. I know at the start I said I'm not going to talk about Britney, but while I was in the middle of recording this episode, this audio of her leaked where she's talking about you know, the conservatorship. It was like a 20-minute something audio that she posted then. Either she deleted it or someone else deleted it. Anyway, I will actually talk about that. I'll do that on Patreon. And the main thing I wanted to say for Patreon, because I just didn't want to put it on the public pod, was I got into a little thing. If you follow me on Instagram, this woke celebrity here, she's sort of like Australia's version of Jamil. You know that, whatever, I can never pronounce her name, Jamili, whatever. I kind of got into a little thing with her over something I had written online at work, and then she didn't like it, and then she like called me out for it, and then I was like, don't clap back, and then of course I did, and I want to talk about that on Patreon, because there's stuff I don't want to say on here. Yeah, anyway, so what else have I been watching? A lot of stuff. So I rewatched All About Eve. Most of you would, I mean, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't know this. I mean, a lot of people do, depends if how into movies you are. But camp classic with Bette Davis, so good and so relevant. Like, I can't believe it hasn't been remade. Anyway, let me just tell you the plot in case you don't know it. So Bette Davis, she plays like a theater star, an aging theater star. She's like at the top of her game in New York. And then this fan comes into her life, and the fan sort of worms her way in and starts working as her assistant. But the fan ends up being basically like a con woman who is obsessed with her and is obsessed with being famous and is trying to get into her life to destroy it so she can become famous herself. It's really great. One thing that I love about it is the villains are gay. They don't explicitly state this in the film because it was made in like 1959, I think. So sometime in the 50s, late 50s, I'm sure. So wait, maybe it was made before then. Wait, let me check. Because Marilyn Monroe had a really, that was one of her like early appearances. And, oh, 1950. Yeah, see, even older, of course. Made in 1950. So you couldn't say that they were gay, but Eve, the super fan, is an implied lesbian. And then there's this sassy theater critic / gossip columnist in the film. And he's clearly gay, but they hide that. And I just love gay villains. I think they're so good. You know, villains are always the most interesting characters and the most entertaining and the ones that you can make the most complex. And there was sort of a stereotype in cinema for a while that they would often cast gay characters in a negative light. Say, she's especially like transgender too. So like in Silence of the Lambs and Psycho and Crying Game and everything. And that was looked on unfavorably, I think, by a lot of people, which I kind of get, but then it's better than having like the heroic gay character, which is just always like so annoying and insufferable. Well, not always, but a lot of the times they're just so fucking annoying. Like the squeaky clean gay. Like, I just prefer the gay villains. They're like fun and they can make the role like a little more campy and it just adds like a little something to it. So I love that. And I can't believe that Ryan Murphy hasn't tried to remake All About Eve, because even though it's made in 1950, it still feels super relevant. It doesn't feel like it's dated at all. Even being set in the theater, it really doesn't feel dated. And I would think that Ryan Murphy, of all people, would have got his claws into this and made, you know, what's the girl that he always puts in? Emma Roberts. He would do Emma Roberts and then, you know, like Kim Cattrall, someone like that. I could totally see him doing it like that. So I don't know. There must be some rights issue behind the scenes, because it doesn't make any sense to me that no one's remade this. I've been on a big Paul Verhoeven, pronounce it correctly. But, you know, like I said, I'm Australian. We're not great at pronouncing things, okay? We destroy the English language. I've been on a rewatch of all of his movies the last few days. So he did like RoboCop, Total Recall, Basic Instinct, Showgirls. He's one of my favorite directors. I love how just gratuitous and like maximalist and like all of his movies are, and also like really subversive too. So I watched Starship Troopers, which I hadn't seen since, that's probably the Paul Verhoeven movie that I've seen the least. I haven't seen it for a really, really long time. So that was really fun to rewatch. And that one took me a long time to watch originally because, you know, I didn't realize that it was before I watched it, I just assumed that it was a generic sci-fi film. I never realized that it was, it was like a critique of US militarism and fascism and everything. I just thought it was like your typical like sci-fi crap. So I'd avoided it for a really long time, but it's so funny. And Denise Richards has such a big role in it. I mean, she's basically the female lead with this other woman. And I love old school Denise Richards because she's just so hot. And she is quite iconic, even though she's never been an Oscar actress or anything. She's got a lot of iconic roles. Like, she was a Bond girl. I know that the Bond movie that she did was one of the crappy Pierce Brosnan ones, but still, she's a Bond girl. Starship Troopers now has been, like, critically reevaluated. That's definitely up there as, like, one of the most famous sci-fi films for sure. I don't know if it's in Criterion Collection or not, but I mean, that's a huge cult movie. Then Wild Things, again, Wild Things is another cult movie. She's had a lot of these sort of really iconic roles. So has Neve Campbell as well, who she starred with in Wild Things, because Neve Campbell has done Scream, obviously. So she's one of the main, like, you know, final girls slasher, one of the biggest slasher stars for sure, with like Jamie Lee Curtis and people like that. And then Neve Campbell's also in Wild Things, iconic. She's in The Craft, another iconic one. She's got to be in something else. I don't know. I love those careers of people that they never like hit that awards level, but they're in like the most memorable movies that everyone just like rewatches over and over. Like those movies, like a Wild Things or a Craft or like a Starship Troopers, people go back and watch those and love those so much more than the Oscar movies and the awards movies. And what else did I watch? Oh yeah, Black Book, which that's Dutch, I think. That's a Paul Verhoeven movie as well. That is so good. I actually posted about that on Instagram the other day, telling people to watch it, because I feel like a lot of people don't know that movie, but it's like a period spy thriller, pretty much. And it's this Jewish woman, and she has to go undercover. She joins like the Dutch resistance against the Nazis in Holland, and then she has to go undercover and work for the Nazis to seduce this Nazi general. And then they end up falling in love and this whole thing happens, and it's really great. It's like really sexy. And there's the thing that's so great about the Verhoeven movies, not only are they smart, but they're just full of like sex and violence the whole time. Like like I said, they're so gratuitous. And they're really well paced. Like, even though a lot of the movies are quite long, they're usually over 2 hours. His films are around the 2 hour mark. There's always a lot happening pretty much from the get-go. So yeah, I'm just going plowing through his movies again because I love them. I think I'm going to do RoboCop next, or Elle. Elle is really good. Another one that I don't know if, I think it did win like Best Foreign Picture, Elle. Not all of his movies are foreign films, but some of them. Elle has, I don't want to actually butcher her name. It's a French name, which I should know since my name is French too. Isabelle, I don't want to say the last name wrong, but she's like a really good actress. And she is like the CEO of a video game company. She gets raped and then she doesn't report it to the police because she's had some bad experiences with the police before. And then she like takes matters into her own hands and she starts playing this like weird cat and mouse game with the rapist. And that is really, really good. And it's not politically correct or anything. It's great. Speaking of actually rape revenge movies, I just remembered this. Has anyone seen the 80s? Film Extremities with Farrah Fawcett? Oh my god, so good. That movie, Farrah Fawcett gets raped, and no, actually I think she gets robbed at the start, and the guy takes her wallet, and then she's scared that he's going to come back for her, so she goes to the police and she reports it, and the police don't do anything. And then the guy comes back to her house to attack her again, and then he goes to rape her, and then she manages to get control somehow and ties him up, and then she pretty much tortures him the whole movie. So most of the movie is just set in her house, and she has this rapist tied up and she's like torturing him for revenge because she knows that the police aren't going to do anything. That's a good one. And her acting is actually really good in that, even though it's sort of like a trashy 80s film. She is quite talented. The other thing I've been watching, I mentioned before, is The Crown. Super into it now, and people are going to be like, what, you're only just watching The Crown, like the biggest Netflix show that's been out for like 6 years now? Yes, I only just started watching The Crown. And the reason I wanted to mention it on here is because I know there are a lot of people like me that just avoid all royal stuff. Like, I had a few messages from you guys telling me that, you know, you weren't interested in Meghan Markle, but then because I reviewed the Meghan Markle book, you went and got the book because I made you curious about it, and you're like, oh, this is so good, and you're all really into it. Well, that's what happened to me, and it made me want to check out The Crown. And I totally get why people are into the royal stuff now, and the show is so well made, and you really get a lot from it, because It's obviously really well shot. Like, they have a really, really big budget. So it looks like beautiful, like a period piece. Like, it kind of looks like Mad Men, you know, but just in like dreary England, a dreary English Mad Men. And you get like salacious kind of family drama of people having affairs or having like family conflicts. Then you get all the historical stuff that was happening at the time. Then you get all like political drama on top of that. And then because it's royal, there's sort of a who's going to be the next prince and the next in line to the throne. Like, it's kind of has everything. And now actually from that, I've been reading about a lot of the royals and the different people and like Wallace Simpson and Edward the, which is the bad Edward that was with the Nazis. That one, Edward the whatever. Anyway, I've just been like going through their Wikipedia pages and I'm like, fuck, this shit is juicy as hell. Like, I really thought the British royal family was so boring for such a long time. And now that I'm like reading all of the scandals and like reading all into it and everything, I'm like, okay, this is so much more exciting than I realized. And it just has a little bit of everything. It's like sexy, it's political, it's historical, you have the family dynamics. It's just, it kind of ticks all the boxes of what makes like a compelling story. And, you know, I think growing up, I was so used to just seeing kind of lame royal scandals on the cover of like supermarket tabloids, you know, like what's Princess Fergie done now? And I just, it just seemed like middle-aged women drama that like, why would you be interested? Why would anyone really be interested in that? And now I get it on a bigger picture. I'm like, okay, I've been royal pilled now. So yes, into the royal stuff. So if you're like me and you were never really into it before, definitely just like check out The Crown and you'll probably be pleasantly surprised. The acting and stuff is so good. Oh my God, John Lithgow, whatever, as Winston Churchill is fucking amazing. Oh my God, it's like my favorite, like just watching him on there. And he's always like spluttering and like, he's just so gross and it's just so good. So definitely give it a watch. All right. So the Meghan Markle podcast is out. This has been so long in the making because how long ago did she sign this damn deal with Spotify for however many millions of dollars? I know it was like a huge, super, super lucrative deal. And then I remember like maybe 2 years ago, she and Harry released some Christmas special with Baby Archie. And then we never heard anything else from it. And even though I wasn't even following the Meghan Markle stuff that closely then, I remember thinking to myself, why did they give you all this money and you took this deal and you're not giving them content? Like, that pisses me off as like a content creator. I'm like, what is going on? Like, that always got under my skin. So anyway, it's finally out. Funny timing because, you know, for me just reading that Tom Bauer book and then bam, she comes out with the podcast. This was really shocking to listen to the pod because I realized that everything that Tom Bauer had said about her was completely true because, you know, when I did review Revenge on here, I had said, look, the book is pretty one-sided, you know, does paint her out to be like a cartoon villain, try not to take everything so seriously. But then you listen to the podcast and it's like, wow, he nailed her. Like, he really got who she is as a person. And even if a few of the things in the book are factually incorrect, I'm sure there's a few things in there, some discrepancies of like, okay, this didn't happen like this, etc. But the essence of her character and just who she is, I think Tom Bauer really nailed that because there's really specific stuff in the with the way she speaks and she lies in the podcast, of course, which I'm going to get into. All of that, it's like, wow, Tom Bauer had all of this in that book, Revenge. And one thing in the book, and I did stress this last week, was I was kind of taken back by like, wow, she's really vacuous. Like, she's really just like a typical kind of liberal Hollywood actress that, you know, wants to get ahead. Like, there's a million of them. Like, she's really quite unremarkable. Like, these sort of women are a dime a dozen. Now, obviously, she's very good at social climbing because of how far she's gotten. So she's probably more talented than the others, but she's still sort of like one of many. There's a lot of these actress types. And seeing her in the media, and if you're not following her so closely, and seeing her with the royal family and hearing about, oh, she worked with the UN, she did this, she did that, you kind of maybe put her on a bit of a higher level and you think that she's more special than she is. And then when you actually listened to the speeches and they read a lot of them out in the book and they'll read out her blog posts and stuff, it's like, wow, this is so banal. Like, this is so shallow, you know, that the speeches are just kind of word salad and buzzwords and very heavy on the platitudes, very Mayor Pete, where you're saying a lot of stuff but you're not really saying anything at all, very, very Mayor Pete kind of stuff. And The podcast is that too. And I thought she would have had like a better team, because with them putting so much money into the podcast, I would think she would have like a really big team behind her giving her some really great content. But I think because she is a bit of a control freak and she is very particular about how she wants her image to come across, she probably actually really did take control of this podcast. And this podcast probably really is her baby and her blood, sweat and tears and everything that she wants in there. And because it's like that, you kind of get a sense of who she is. And it's all just outdated 2016 era, like girl boss feminist cliches, like the most basic bitch stuff. And I'm like, wow, we are so beyond this. Like, for a company like Spotify to pay as much money as they did for this kind of content, which is just so behind the times at this point, like the progressive activism speak and what they're doing has really moved past this era of like the girl boss, hashtag girl boss cliches. And Megan's still stuck, you know, 7 years ago doing this. I mean, this is so basic that she's still doing I persisted, you know, nevertheless, she persisted. She puts that in the, quotes that in the start. And then her takes on the podcast, I'm not exaggerating, they're as fucking generic as, when a man is ambitious, he's praised for it. But when a woman's ambitious, she's called a bitch. That's literally what the whole podcast is. I was like, holy fuck, someone paid like $10 million to make this. Like, big bucks for the bare minimum. Now, Serena Williams is the guest. She's the first guest on the first episode. They talk about ambition. Throughout the podcast, Megan just stresses her friendship with Serena so much. Like, literally, my friend Serena, my good friend Serena, Serena, who I've known for X amount of years, Serena, my bestie. Oh my God, Serena, I knew you were going to retire because we're such good friends. And, you know, you told me like 6 months ago, but I'm just so excited you can share it with the world now, because, you know, I already knew about it because, you know, we text all the time. We're always talking. I'm not exaggerating. She does that throughout the whole podcast. And it was so funny because Tom Bauer in the book highlighted how she does stuff like that and how she attaches herself to really successful people and tries to either for social climbing purposes, or she just exaggerates, like, you know, their friendship. And she really is doing that on the podcast because she just wants everyone to know, look how close I am to Serena Williams. You know, Serena Williams is like the most famous female athlete ever. Like, she's just incredible. She's, you know, triple A list. So, you know, Megan is so wanting to be, you know, in Serena's shine. A lot of the podcast and a lot of their conversation is really just two rich, successful, privileged women trying to make themselves sound like victims because of, you know, men can be ambitious, but women can't. Like, that's the podcast. And to be honest, a lot of it is coming from Megan. Serena sort of sounds like not that interested. Like, it's almost like she's doing Megan a favor by doing the pod. And I think they recorded it over Zoom because I think this was done. Like, I don't know why it's taken Meghan Markle so long to get this damn podcast out, but I think this was done during maybe lockdown times or COVID travel restriction times, because I think it's over Zoom, because then they have to do a follow-up at the end where Serena talks about her retirement, because when they first recorded it, like, none of that was even public. So they're going on kind of about like what victims they are. And from my perspective, I don't follow sports that closely. Like, yes, I've watched a little bit of tennis here and there, especially when I was a teenager, I did. But I have never really known, and I could be wrong, like, honestly, I could be wrong because I don't follow sports closely, but just as like a normie person that just gets kind of gets the broad strokes of what's happening with, you know, certain star athletes, I've always known Serena to be, you know, cover of Vogue magazine, praised as the most incredible, like, talented, you know, female athlete, like one of, not even female athlete, really, like, just considered one of the best athletes. Like, most people know Serena Williams, but they couldn't name like a bunch of male athletes, because like, that's how big she is. And obviously her sister Venus too. It's like, wow, these two women, they're so incredible. They're sisters. They're like both the number one tennis players in the world. Isn't this incredible? Now, I know that Serena has had some like tantrums on the court and some people have said, oh, she's a bit of a diva and stuff. I know men that have had, like, I know here in Australia, I can only speak for here, but this tennis guy, Bernard Tomic, he had a really bad reputation here. So I remember him. Who's the other guy that has a bad rep? Nick Kyrgios. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Kyrgios something. If you're into tennis, you'll know about that. I think even Novak Djokovic, you know, the anti-vax guy who I love, obviously, because he wouldn't comply to the mandates. People said stuff about him. So I've seen, you know, things about the character of men and women. Now, I can't say if Serena's correct that she cops it more than men do. I don't know, but these things can go really both ways, because it's like, think of it like this. When I was growing up, right, when I was like 13, Anna Kournikova was the biggest fucking star. Like, she was on the cover of, you know, FHM every freaking week. She was in the Enrique Iglesias music video. She had all the endorsement deals. They'll do rankings. Richest in sport, it'll be like Anna Kournikova. Anna Kournikova was not even that highly ranked of a tennis player. You know, she, I think she was in like the top 100 or whatever. So she's making more money than the most talented male and female athletes just because she was this, you know, hot, she's Russian, right? Something like whatever, Yugoslav, I don't know where, European. So because of her look, she's making all this money. So she's having an advantage over that. So I think sometimes some of these things sort of even out a bit. And I can just say that personally, I've never seen Serena as some like victim of the media. I've always seen her very much lauded for the most part. And there was a time when some Australian cartoonist did a cartoon that people said was racist against her when she threw a tantrum, and like the whole media mobilized to defend her against that. So I wasn't really buying into this, you know, whole narrative that Serena Williams is like, you know, some downtrodden victim of misogyny. Now, as for Megan, her whole angle with this, you know, we're doing an episode about the term ambition, is just all PR for herself, right? She's trying to reclaim the term ambitious as if she's been misrepresented. And it's like, you're not you haven't been labeled badly just for being ambitious. It's because you were like this ambitious social climbing, like, actress that was always trying to get up into like higher circles in Hollywood. You tell lies. You know, weaseled your way into the royal family and then tried to destroy the royal family with lies, you know, trying to strategically bring out these things. Oh, they were racist against the baby, all this other stuff, that like things that have been disproven. Okay, so you tried to destroy the royal family. That's why people hate you, and because you lie. Like, it's not just for being ambitious. Like, I think it's cool that she was ambitious and she clawed her way up through Hollywood, because it's like, she's not the most talented actress ever. And she really hustled and she wormed her way into a lot of kind of elite spaces and elite groups of people. Like, you've already got to be friends with some elite people to even be able to be set up on a blind date with Prince Harry. So, you know, there's a lot of these actresses, like I said before, they're like a dime a dozen. So the fact that Meghan could get as far as she did, that's kind of cool. But then to the point where you marry into the royal family, lie and try to destroy them, that's why people don't like you, girl, you know, and lie constantly. So it's just so fake to come on and make this whole podcast about, like, you know, I've been unfairly called ambitious. It's like, you're like really simplifying this and leaving out like a lot of context here. Abby Chatfield did that too here in Australia. I've talked about her a couple of times on here. I know that people outside of Australia don't really know her, but she is like one of our biggest media stars now, and she's like killing it. She's got 50 jobs. She got her start on The Bachelor, and she was the villain on that season. And on the show, they showed her as really competitive, not a girl's girl at all. Like, she would trot over all of the women to get what she wanted. She used her sexuality in quite a manipulative way. Like, she was just DTF with the guy on The Bachelor because she wanted to win, and it didn't come off like she was in love with him. It came off like she was entitled and just wants to tread over all the other girls and has to come first and has to be the center of attention. Like, that's how she came across. Now, after the show, she went on this whole sort of media, and she did a really good job of it, much better than Megan has, because people have seen Megan's true colors. But Abby did a whole thing of like, oh, I was sex shamed for being, you know, sex positive. They can't stand a strong woman that knows what she wants. They can't see a woman that's open about her sexuality on television. She hammered that point, and she kind of turned her image around. Then she became this like Amber Rose of Australia, like the sex positive queen, and she did a dildo line, and now she's like the judge on The Masked Singer here. Like, and she's a judge on The Masked Singer. She has a national radio show on like one of the major networks every night of the week. Like, she's huge. So it worked for her, but she was everything they said she was on The Bachelor. And I, you know, as a tabloid reporter, actually was covering that season a lot behind the scenes. And I even reached out to some girls on, like, I talked to a lot of girls from that season of the show on behind the scenes things. And I know people that Abby was even working with after that, where she was like leaking stuff, whatever. I'm not going to get into that, but I know like tea about her. And a lot of the girls on this season, every girl that I talked to from that season was like, yeah, she's exactly like she has been portrayed on the show. I even at one point, I was trying to get in contact with Abby while that show was filming, And I was like, hey, you know, she's really getting a beat up on this show. Like, she looks really bad. And I think her sister had come out and defended her, saying that she was being edited badly. So I thought, hey, if they're, because I know the Australian editing, especially on The Bachelor Australia, is really, like, they really do misrepresent people a lot, and they do a lot of frankenbiting. And I had known people that had been victims of that on these shows. So I was like, hey, if there's this other side of Abby that's not getting out there, like, let me get in contact with her. Maybe I can do a story and get the truth. And, like, one of the girls had said to me, okay, because a lot of the girls didn't want to talk to the media. And then one of them said, oh, look, you know, I wasn't going to talk to you, but now you're saying you're going to do this. She was like, Abby's the worst. Like, she was everything they've shown her on the show. She was so competitive. She was so this, she was so that. And then kind of after the show, the girls from her season didn't want to come out and say the truth about her because she got so famous and she's so, Abby really comes after her. I mean, I did an episode about her last year some point when Abby was using her huge platform to go after other celebrities that she thought weren't vaccinated and was like bullying them publicly. She was messaging them privately going, you better tell your followers to get vaccinated or I'm going to like roast you on my Instagram stories. I'm going to blast you on my podcast. Like, that's what she was doing. Like, she's a fucking tyrant. So, you know, a lot of the women got scared to talk out about her. And I think for a while, people have been scared to talk out against Megan because, you know, Megan had this whole thing of like, if you criticize me, you're racist. If you criticize me, you're sexist. And she really weaponized that movement. And we've slowly seen that start to fall apart as all of her lies have come out and people have checked her. Now, back to the podcast. Of course, the podcast was filled with lies or half-truths or, you know, Megan is very good at taking a kernel of truth, so something that's kind of true, and then she completely spins it and puts her own twist on it and you weaponizes it, okay? So she opens the podcast with this story that she's told a million times about how when she was a little girl, she saw a sexist campaign about washing dishes. It was a dish soap, but they marketed it to women in the kitchen, and she got outraged. And she wrote a letter to Procter & Gamble and was like, why isn't it people in the kitchen? Why is it women in the kitchen, right? And Megan tells that story all the time. And Megan tells the story as if my letter that I wrote to Procter & Gamble caused them to change the campaign. And then I knew from then that, you know, I had a voice and I could make positive change in the world. But the truth is, yes, she saw the ad, she got outraged, she wrote a letter, but it was like a widespread thing of like thousands of people writing letters and media pressure and stuff. And then it led to the public pressure eventually, and they covered this in the Tom Bauer book, led for them to change the campaign. It wasn't because Megan's one letter writing into them, this little girl, got this huge company to change their entire marketing campaign, but she tries to make it like it was just all about her. And I thought that after Tom Bauer kind of debunked that in his book, that she would maybe stop telling the story, but she opens the podcast with that freaking story and still with the lie, the fake version of it, that she's the one that like took down Procter & Gamble's, you know, sexist advertising campaign. Now, she had another story in there that you would have seen in the media about how when she was in South Africa, they left baby Archie with the nanny and then the nursery caught fire and like, thank God baby Archie wasn't in there. And then she's like, and then we were forced out to a royal engagement right after and we couldn't say no. And, you know, I had to smile through the tears or whatever. Like, she puts on this whole sob story. As soon as I saw that, like from the podcast, because within a few hours of the podcast coming out, all the media outlets had listened to it and were like, you know, getting circulating the best parts of it. I saw that and I'm like, we're going to need a fact checker on this one because I'm guessing this is probably a lie. And of course, within 24 hours or 2 days, it had been fact checked. Most of the story didn't add up. Like, for one, it was really hot in South Africa at the time. So why would you have a heater on? There was all these other like inconsistencies. And then I think, oh, there was a royal reporter that was with her on the trip and he was covering it all closely. And he was like, I never heard anything about this. And then, of course, what it turns out to be is that there was some kind of like minor malfunction with the heater and, you know, everything was fine. But the way that she tells the story is like, you know, the heater burst into flames and, you know, Archie could have been charred to a crisp and then the evil royal family forced us out there against our will to continue this, you know, royal tour and I just had to flee to protect my child. It's like, no, that's not what happened. You take like a very minor thing and then you blow it up and spin it and like she's just such a liar. There's so much that she lies. She can't help it. You would think at this point she would stop the lying, which is strange that she continues to do it. So you start to think like, I don't know. Is there something wrong with you? You know, like, because I know the hardcore Meghan haters are like, she's a sociopath. She's a... I don't go that far. I think she's just a manipulative actress. But it is interesting that she continues to lie, even with all the scrutiny, even with being fact-checked and people exposing her. I mean, does she have just such an ego that she just thinks that the audience in America, who are a lot less critical of her than everywhere else, that they're just going to eat this up and it's going to work in her favor? I don't know. The entire pod, it's just all PR for her brand, right? And it's disguised as social activism, which is, you know, a lot of these people do this. Sarah Galley does this too. A lot of these people do it where they try to make it like, okay, this is for the greater good. This is for a greater cause. It's like, no, this is just actually all about you. It's either you getting clout off this. It's you trying to repair your image, whatever it is. And it's why she picked these specific topics, because she can relate them back to herself and then play the victim. The more she speaks, the worse she looks. Like, it really feels like the emperor has no clothes. I think if she had just not talked that much and kept quiet and sort of played the royal long game, she would have actually come out with this amazing image, and she would have been, you know, the humanitarian queen, and maybe she would have been able to become that next Diana like she wanted. But then she was so greedy and was so keen to just start enriching herself from the off the royal brand and putting it into, you know, like making herself rich and famous and everything from the back of it, that one, you just see again what an idiot she is, and that she's really not that special, and she's another dime a dozen, and that she's just a complete liar. Also, the podcast was sprinkled with all these personal anecdotes, which were very, like, the baby Archie in the fire is one of them, but there was a lot of things in there that were clearly, like, planted that she had done for a headline. Like, even the way she was, like, telling the stories, you could tell she'd rehearsed them. And, like, at the start, Harry makes a cameo. That was staged because she's on a Zoom call with Serena Williams, and if Harry knows she's in there recording her, you know, $10 million Spotify podcast, he's not going to be, like, interrupting her. But she's like, oh, Harry just walked in. Come say hi. Come say hi to Serena. Because, you know, they want to have that little cute interaction. So people listening are like, oh, like, you know, Harry and Meghan are so normal and cute. Like, that, look at this unscripted, natural moment between them. It's like, no, this is all staged. Like, everything about this is fake. We also have Hillary Clinton's Gutsy coming to Apple TV. I watched the trailer for this. So it's Hillary and Chelsea Clinton. Can Chelsea Clinton please just fuck off forever? Like, I don't like Hillary, but at least Hillary has, you know, achieved some things. That, like, what have you done, Chelsea? You've just benefited from your parents. Like, go away, you hideous woman. But this whole Gutsy thing is just, they're on a road trip across America to speak to, I don't know, strong women. Like, I saw the trailer, they're talking to, like, Kate Hudson about I don't know what. This is just, again, it's like, okay, we're doing activism to enrich ourselves, because how much money are they being paid for Apple to do this, you know? It's so actually disgusting how all these American politicians, it's such an American thing. I know that Trump, I don't know specifically what Trump did, because I know it was things with, like, conflicts of interest with his businesses, and he was still getting money for, like, whatever, all of his hotels or something. But I know he was, like, getting all this money. And I think, weren't Jared and Ivanka doing a lot of shady shit too? Anyway, I know they were making all this money off the presidency. Obama, from his presidency, him and Michelle signing their book deals, their Netflix deals, people throwing money at them just to put out crap, like that podcast that Obama did with Bruce Springsteen. You know, just they just put out shit and they get all this money from it. And it's like, you were a public servant. You're not supposed to be out here getting $20 million to, like, sit and chat with Bruce Springsteen. Now we have Hillary Clinton with her Apple deal. Of course, the Apple series has personal anecdotes from Hillary, because no one's going to care. No one wants to watch her drive across to talk to Kate Hudson about feminism, but then she's, you know, addressing the affair with Bill Clinton. So, of course, people want to know about that. So that's going to get eyeballs on there. So they're very strategic with how they sprinkle those things in. Hillary's just a disgusting person. I've seen her promo that she's still bashing Bernie Sanders. Like, she's so evil. Like, I can't believe she just won't stop. It's like, what's wrong with you? Like, Bernie didn't even call you out when you fucking helped rig the primary and have done everything to destroy him. You rigged it against him. He still went and campaigned for her, which is so wild because he's such a cuck. He's so beta. Like, that's why I lost so much respect for him. But he still went out and campaigned for her and, like, told progressives, please go vote for Hillary Clinton. Please go vote for Joe Biden. And she still, like, holds him personally responsible for her loss, which is not his fault. Like, he should be angry at her. But he's, like, played the good little Democratic foot soldier, and she continues to shit on him every chance she gets. She was, like, she came out, like, the other week saying, yes, he's sexist. I know what he says about women. It's like, you are so evil. Like, you were just the worst. You're a terrible fucking person. Anyway, whatever. I don't know who the audience is for this crap in 2022. Who's watching Gutsy and listening to Archetypes? Genuinely, like, thinking this is good content. Like, it's crazy. And Archetypes went number one, and the media tried to be like, Meghan Markle's podcast knocks Joe Rogan off the top spot. Girl, bye. The thing is, with new podcasts, they go number one because the algorithm favors that. So when you come out with a new podcast, that's why Teresa Giudice's podcast, can you believe she has a fucking podcast? Her podcast went like number one, or it ranked really highly, and everyone was like, oh my God, she's beating Melissa Gorga on the charts. Take that, Melissa. And it's like, every new podcast goes like number one. Well, celebrity ones do anyway, when they already have a following, because you get a massive new listens and subscribers, and the algorithm reacts to subscribers. So it's not like Meghan's like, do you really think that Meghan Markle fucking talking about ambition is going to beat Joe Rogan, who just had fucking Mark Zuckerberg, Aaron Rodgers, like all these huge guests that are exposing like amazing information about like stuff that's going on in the government and like all this corruption? Girl, bye. You are not going to be better than Joe Rogan. Like, stop. Like, her podcast, I'm sure, will rank decently throughout its run. I don't think it's going to like flop. I think it'll probably like maybe stay in the top 10 or so, but you know, it's not. I don't think it's going to be worth the money that Spotify paid for it. I think especially now that Meghan's image has gone to shit and everyone hates her. The thing with Obama, even if his podcast is shitty, he still does have like a very good image among that demographic of people. Even though I do think the Bruce Springsteen one flopped, but even so, even if that flops, it's still kind of good PR for Spotify, I think, to be associated with him and associated with the Obama brand and, you know, with Michelle Obama. I know her book was a huge hit, so it's good. It's a good look for Spotify, but Megan's not a good look. Like, truly, when all of the good grace she had and the good image she had going for a while is sort of over and everyone is seeing the truth now, so, you know, such a waste of money. I don't know what else she's going to do for this deal. I mean, her Netflix show got dropped, that Pearl that she was doing, that the children's show, they dropped that, and now they've got to do a Netflix reality show. You know, like, that's how low they've sunk. So she's really heading down Princess Fergie territory at this point. That's pretty much it. I know the VMAs were just on. Let me have a look at the winners and have a little reaction to that. Because I'm whatever. Video of the year, Taylor Swift, All Too Well. I haven't seen that because that song came out ages ago and then she like re-recorded the album. I'm like, well, I heard the album when it came out, so I don't need to look at that. Do I know any of these other videos? I know that Lil Nas X should have won because he was for Industry Baby being naked. I love that. Best New Artist, Dove Cameron. That makes no sense. Dove Cameron is like a Nickelodeon star or a Disney star, one of those. She's been putting out music for years. And how do you win Best New Artist when you're old? Like, girl, you've been in the industry for way too long to be a Best New Artist. And then I see this K-pop group, 17, were nominated for Best New Artist. I saw 17 perform in Australia like 5 years ago. They're not new. Actually, by K-pop standards, they're considered like quite old. So I don't know why they would be nominated for Best New Artist. Best New Rock category. This is so embarrassing, right? Because I mean, I like a lot of the bands in here. So they've got like 3 Days Grace, Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know, Jack White, Foo Fighters, Muse, Shine. I've never heard of Shinedown. It's the only one I don't know. But all of these groups are like 20 years old. So that's just the sad state of rock music. How do you not have more new rock artists that you can nominate? The Foo Fighters have been around since the 90s. The Red Hot Chili Peppers have been around since the 90s. Jack White. When did the White Stripes come out? Maybe early 2000s? That's like 20 years. Some of these groups like 30 years old, and that's who's getting nominated. I mean, like, you should be, that's good for them as the veterans, but I just don't know how they don't have more new talent to put in there. Artist of the Year, Bad Bunny. I support that. Love Bad Bunny. Love, 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 love. And he deserves that because his album is like, that's been like number one on Spotify pretty much since it came out like months ago. So shout out to Bad Bunny. Song of the Summer, Jack Harlow, First Class. I don't like that song. Who would have I given this to? I would have given it to, let me see. And I'll answer this. I'm going to answer this objectively and not just what I personally think is the best song on the list. If I'm being objective, it should have been the Lotto song, the Big Dick Energy, because that was such a fun summer. Like, that was just, I did love that song, but I feel like that deserves it. Or, you know, all the Lizzo song. I don't even like Lizzo, but that About Damn Time song, they play that everywhere in commercials and stuff like that, probably should have won. I mean, I know Jack Harlow's song was a hit too, but I just think he sucks. Best Hip Hop, Nicki Minaj featuring Lil Baby. I don't even know that song. I like hip hop, but I probably listen to like older hip hop. So yeah, I don't know that. Best Latin, Anita. No, Bad Bunny should win everything with the Latin category. Video for Good. I don't know what that is. What, Best Woke Video? They gave that to Lizzo About Damn Time. I don't care about that. Best K-pop, Lisa from Blackpink won. That's so... Blackpink got a lot of... Blackpink performed there and... I hate Blackpink. I think they're like one of the worst K-pop groups. There's sort of everything bad about K-pop when people talk about the music being like really shit and sort of factory produced and just like total crap. But they are like one of the biggest K-pop artists, especially internationally. Like, they have a huge international like Western following. I always feel conflicted about it because BTS actually used to be pretty good, but they've gotten worse. But Blackpink especially... I'm like happy for their success because, you know, when I, back in the day with my music blog, when I first started covering K-pop and I was like, it's going to blow up, like it's going to get big. Oh my God. I got so hated. You're delusional, as if no one wants to listen to this. No one cares about K-pop, blah, blah, blah. Now like BTS is like one of the biggest pop acts of like this generation. Blackpink are huge as well. I mean, their single, I think, just debuted at number one in Australia. They were definitely one of the most talked about acts at the VMAs and stuff. So in that regard, even though I think they're shit and I think there's like way better K-pop that should be spotlighted, I do like seeing these K-pop artists succeed, especially because I just know how much hate I got back in the day for like promoting K-pop when no one else was. Of course, as usual, I get proven right in the end, but I have to go through hell beforehand. Album of the Year, Harry Styles. I don't know. Maybe he deserved that. I would give it to Bad Bunny or Billie Eilish. Loved that. But I mean, Harry Styles has been pretty popular. They should have given that. What's the really good Harry Styles song? At Last or something? At Time? Whatever that. You know the song I'm talking about? They always play. That should have won some stuff because I know that song's everywhere. Best collaboration, Lil Nas and Jack Harlow. Yeah, Industry Baby, love that. All I listen to is Lil Nas and Bad Bunny and K-pop. Push Performance of the Year. Okay, that's a K-pop 17 one. That is a good song, so that deserves it. Best Metaverse Performance and Blackpink. Yuck, that song's terrible. The Blackpink song that won for that. Awful. Best Alternative, Maneskin, however you pronounce them. They're so cheesy. Avril Lavigne is nominated twice in the Best Alternative category. I'm fucking dead. Song of the Year, Billie Eilish, Happier Than Ever. I love Billie Eilish's song, so I agree. Doja Cat Woman. Oh my God, I love that song. Doja Cat Woman or Billie Eilish, I would have been happy with either of those. Best Pop. Oh, Best Pop, As It Was, Harry Styles. That's the song I was talking about. That deserved that. Best R&B, The Weeknd. I don't really care about The Weeknd. Who else is nominated? Oh, Normani and Cardi B, Wildside, love that. Oh, no, Summer Walker. Give it to Summer Walker. That's who I would endorse for that award, not The Weeknd. Summer Walker's my fave. Best group, BTS, whatever. They do deserve it, though. Like, no one's bigger than BTS, but even though I don't like them anymore. Cinematography, Harry Styles, good for you. Best direction, more Taylor. They kept giving Taylor this awards this fucking All Too Well. Who cares? Best art direction, Lil Nas X. Yes, he deserves that. Industry Baby for sure. Best visual effects. Oh my God, another Industry Baby. Love seeing Lil Nas Industry Baby sweep. I was listening to that in the gym the other day. Best choreography, Doja Cat Woman. Yes, glad that woman won something. Such a good song. Best editing, Rosalia. I don't know. I don't know her songs individually, but like I listen to them on like reggaeton mixes on Spotify, and I like all of her songs. So good for you. Okay, that's my reaction to the VMAs. Thanks for listening, guys. New Patreon will be in the next few days. So if you're subscribed, it's coming. And make sure you're following me on socials. Twitter, Instagram is at UnpopularJP. The Patreon's patreon.com/UnpopularJP. All the links are in my bio. Feel free to leave me a 5-star review on Apple if you have not. I mean, most people have been really good with the reviews lately. I've had a lot of really nice ones, so I don't need to like harass you guys at the moment to do it. But next time I get like a flurry of negative ones, I will be coming back on here like screaming at you all to leave me a good review. That's it. Thanks for listening. Bye.